from KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm John Sepulvedo. We begin with President Trump's new travel ban. It was intended to fix legal issues cited by the federal courts when they blocked his original executive order. But as KQED's senior editor for politics and government, Scott Schaefer, tells us, the new executive order will face new legal challenges.
Iraq is off the president's new list, leaving six predominantly Muslim nations with travel restrictions. The new order also exempts U.S. green card holders from the travel limitations, and unlike the original order, which took effect immediately, this one begins March 16th. Legal scholars acknowledge the revision smooths out some of the rougher edges that caused chaos at airports when the first order was implemented without warning in late January. But the rewrite won't stop civil liberties groups, including the ACLU of Southern California, which plan to file new lawsuits. Legal Director Alilan Arhublanantham says even the president's new order will adversely affect people who already have substantial ties to the U.S.
Like people who are married and want to come to get a visa to come live with their spouse, or people who are teaching classes at universities or studying for a degree at a university.
The ACLU believes people like that are protected by the Constitution's guarantee of equal treatment regardless of religion or national origin, even if they aren't citizens. In other words, as President Trump himself tweeted, see you in court. For the California Report, I'm Scott Schaefer.
Now, while Scott notes that President Trump said he would see people in court, he ultimately dropped that case. Meanwhile, protesters seem to be dropping their fight as well, because across California, there appears to be fewer protesters at the airports after this ban was announced. At San Francisco International, about 20 people showed up. Last time, there were hundreds. An Iranian-American protester named Nancy worries people will think the revision is more acceptable and not protest as vigorously.
I'm on a green card, probably will apply for citizenship in a few years. I travel a lot. I'm scared. It's just the same ban, different wording. So I just try to convince people how bad the situation is. And I hope they think about it. That's the least I hope for.
Now, as we heard, the new order won't take effect until March 16th and will allow green card holders. We're going to move on now. Congressional Republicans have released their plan to replace the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare. The plan was kept from the public while it was worked out, and we're working to bring you a California Republican to discuss the proposals, which include ditching the individual mandate to purchase health insurance. Of course, as you've heard on this show, it's a tough time for congressional members, especially Republicans. They've been getting swamped by constituents at public appearances. So many are coming up with unorthodox ways to meet with the public, while limiting their chances of embarrassing experiences. Take California's 21st District, where Central Valley Republican David Valadeo decided to have one-on-one meetings. Central Valley reporter Vanessa Roncagno tells us how that went.
Aaron Prosser had been waiting to talk to the congressman for an hour when his phone buzzed with a news alert.
I just got an email that they've unveiled their plan.
That would be the Republicans' long-awaited Affordable Care Act replacement plan. Prosser is an Anglican priest and relies on Obamacare. He has chronic health issues and wants Valadeo to know the cost of denying coverage to people like him.
I myself am going to go from someone who can work and pay my taxes to someone who's going to be in the emergency room a whole lot. And I don't want to be there.
62 people signed up to speak with Valadeo, much more than what staffers expected. Each constituent got 10 minutes. 2 hours into the event, only 18 people had gotten into the back room where Valadeo stayed out of sight. Standing outside the district office, some people said they would have preferred an open forum.
With the town hall meeting, then we could all show up at one time. I wouldn't have to wait 2 hours with my three kids, and we could get it all done at once.
Amanda Vryhoff was hoping to make a case against school vouchers, but after 2 hours of waiting, she had to get her kids home. She says she'll keep trying to get her message through.
I've been calling. I'm going to keep calling.
And she's working on a letter to her congressman. For the California Report, I'm Vanessa Rancagno in Hanford.
Moving on now to the justice system. Did you know if a kid gets arrested and put in juvenile hall, parents often have to pay for their jail stay? But as KQED's Suki Lewis tells us, the legislature is looking to change that.
This year, State Senator Holly Mitchell's introduced a bill, SB 190, to end juvenile fees statewide. After looking into the issue, she says,
what we walked away with was that it was more onerous and more difficult on the families being subjected to the fees versus beneficial, really, in any meaningful way, to the counties or the probation departments.
Mitchell says the way the fees are collected is also unfair and sometimes unlawful. In Contra Costa County, an internal review going back 4 years found more than 200 families were improperly charged. Probation Chief Todd Bellecci's department oversees the collection of juvenile fines in the county.
Individuals were charged or billed for a fee when there's no sustained petition.
No sustained petition. That basically means they're found not guilty, but still had to pay. For these cases, the probation department is actively trying to refund families. But juvenile justice advocate Rebecca Brown says settling with those parents isn't enough. Brown describes what one woman recently told her on the phone.
She said, I work for a homeless shelter. I'm raising my grandchildren. My son was incarcerated for a year. I've been trying to pay off that bill. I asked her, how much is that bill? She said, $13,000.
Brown says the county needs to work to undo the harms caused by an unfair system that's been charging parents for decades. The movement to do away with these fees is gaining traction across the state. In the past year, Contra Costa, Alameda, and Santa Clara counties all stopped collecting juvenile fines. Yesterday, Butte County joined them. There will be a hearing on SB 190 later this month. For the California Report, I'm Suki Lewis in Contra Costa County.
Support for the California Report comes from the California Endowment, working to achieve health and justice for all. Learn more at calendow.org. Barracuda Networks, security, archiving, and backup solutions for physical networks and public cloud services such as Microsoft Azure and Office 365. Learn more at barracuda.com/KQED. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.
That's the California Report for Tuesday, March 7th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm John Sepulvedo. Have a great day.